That's why it's like disturbing. I just put on my avatar.
That's smart.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, start with. It all goes quiet now.
Okay, I'll say. Oh, I'm getting ready. I gotta really jump the shower. But I've been really, the Lord's really been dealing with me about jumping into the river of fire and just let everything be consumed, because I have a lot of blockages, and the Lord has been lie busting me. And as he's lie-busting me, he's showing me the things the enemy attached to my life since I was very young so that he would hinder the call. And so I figured, okay, Lord, what do we do? Let's get this thing done. And he's just really been showing me the river of fire. And I was doing the fire stones yesterday from your, when you were with the fiery ones. And I jumped into the stones and everything, but I just kept seeing the river of fire. And I thought, I don't really know enough about it, but I know that the Lord wants me to go there. So I've been there once, only at the edge. But it's like, don't just stay at the edge. Jump in. Get in there. So could you kind of expound on that, please? Thank you, Mike.
Well, the sort of the river of fire comes out of, Daniel chapter 7. It comes out from the throne of God, and it's the realm where Jesus is sat next to the Father, and he is in the position of governmental authority on his right hand, and then all our thrones go off that. And not the thrones that are on our sort of mountain or anything like that, but actually the throne of who we are in terms of kingdom authority, where we're seated with him in heavenly places. That's where it is. And the fire stones sort of ascend up to that place of the throne, and the river of fire flows down from that throne, sort of next to the fire stone. So it's a pretty intense place. And as you would expect, a river of fire, what's the difference between a river of fire than the river of life? Well, its purpose. And, its purpose is for us to engage with it for the purpose of consuming fire. And there are a number of places where you can sort of engage in similar dimensions of things, but they're all slightly different. You can go before the judgment seat of Christ and face the fiery pillar with the eyes of fire, and that's an intense place. You can go to the temple where the altar is and where the seraphim are, the burning ones. And that's another place where it's like, okay, woe is me, I'm undone, I'm unraveled. I go there and it's just like everything just gets unraveled. And God has asked me to go there recently and put my heart on the altar. And when I've put my heart on the altar, the seraphim have just come and fanned their wings and just created this intense heat, which was all to do with my emotions. Whereas, the river of fire, when I've engaged the river of fire, it is about consuming those things like chains, restrictions, hindrances that have been put on me rather than I have put on myself or that as a result of something I've done. Because when it's something I've done, then I need to judicially remove the authorization I've given because of maybe something I've said or something that's authorized the enemy to have an access point, and I do that personally myself. But this is where my engagement there is like if there are chains attached to my life or if there are things that have been put on by others or words that have been spoken over me by others, then it's like the consuming fire of that river is that I can be baptized in it. And my encouragement would be to engage that river is go into it. Don't just walk on it or go to the edge of it. Actually allow your whole being, if you like, to submerge in the river of fire and surrender and submit anything that's on the surface of your life, because it's the surface that it's engaging. If you want it to engage your heart, then you go and present your heart on the altar. If you want it, if you want the fire of God to deal with your scroll and to deal with the wood, hay, and stubble in your life, then go before the judgment seat. Now, they are, you know, essentially different places that deal with different levels of things that are on our life, you know, and I found it a pretty intense experience. You know, probably not as intense for me as the Firestones, because they are more revelatory, whereas this is more transformatory, and where I need to be totally open for God to remove in that fire everything. So it's like, it's almost like molten, you know, when you go in it. But it's another cleansing, transformation process, and part of where we can engage, you know. So, you know, that's been my personal experience of it. But, you know, I know that there are different places in the realms of heaven for different things. And that one seems to be associated with that. Because then when I've engaged in the river of fire, it's almost enabled me to then go through the fire stones at a deeper level, you know, and engage the meaning of those stones, and for those stones to take me to a different level. I mean, you know, my first level on those stones was very much emotional, engaging with the fruit of the Spirit and just feeling one with Him, just joined, connected. You know, then, you know, I've engaged and just gone into the stones, or looked into the stones the first time to see the color and the things that were in the stone, which were really reflecting some protocols of God's ways and different things. And then, you know, the last couple of times I've gone into it, and it's been like I've been in it. And it's like, you know, I think someone recently described the, you know, the tablets of stone that Moses was given as, you know, the sapphire on the sapphire pavement as a cube rather than tablets, the Hebrew meaning cube. And you can be in it. On Sunday morning, actually, I was engaging with wisdom, and I was wanting to engage one of the chancellor's houses and felt wisdom take me, and she took me, and I ended up in this sapphire cube. I mean, I was in the middle of it, looking at all these facets from the inside out. You know, sometimes you can look into a stone and you can see the cut of it, but I was on the inside of it, just totally surrendered and to it, but surrounded and encompassed with it. Justin, there were these amazing facets that were the ways of God. You know, it was just like, I mean, it was overwhelming. It was an overwhelming experience, but it's all tied, I think, to, in again, going deeper, you know, and being in Him rather than looking into Him or being with Him, but being in Him. You know, being with Him just goes deeper and deeper the more you engage it. And I know my spirit was just absorbing the what was being released from those facets as I was beholding them, so I could become like them. You know, it wasn't a cognitive thing. I wasn't like trying to analyze it, or what does this facet mean? What I just was there and totally connected spiritually to it, you know. So yeah, that's some of the things with fire and transformation that is certainly part of the process. You know, the seraphim and the burning ones are all part of that, engaging in this in surrender. You know, we have to surrender to it, but I think the more we choose to embrace it and engage in it, the more transformation takes places. And remembering, you know, our God is a consuming fire, but He's only going to consume that which is doing us no good or causing us harm. You know, He's not going to consume us. What's left afterwards is the pure gold and the wonderful shining diamonds and those things. What's before is often the what's there before that pure gold and how that gets at work. So, yeah. Okay. All right. So, has anyone got anything else on any of around that, or want to share something that's going on, or give testimony to something? Feel free. Oh. Was it something I said?
No. That's not what I would say. So what's the whole, have you got any revelation about peacocks and the eyes, what that all stands for? I mean, obviously it's eyes and the spirit, but have you seen a lot of that, or?
Well, in terms of engaging peacocks in the spirit realm, or?
No, what they probably represent.
Well, I mean, they do, they obviously do have lots of eyes on them. I mean, you know, I think some of the angelic beings, you know, you get the eyes within the four living creatures. They're all covered with eyes within and underneath. It's just, it's a weird, you know, and the wheels within wheels are all covered with eyes. I mean, it's a weird thing, isn't it? But in a sense, it's like we know that eyes don't just look, they also receive, because, you know, in us, our eyes are the windows of our soul. So it's not just what they're observing, but also what they're receiving. And, you know, I think trying to understand some of the symbolic nature, you know, if we had a vision of a peacock, or there was something where a peacock was, in a sense, we were drawn to it. You know, I think it's always a two-way thing. You know, what is the observation of what is being seen and what is being received? And, you know, we also have different eyes. We have our natural eyes, which are actually windows. I can't remember where it was now, but I was reading an article about how children receive from their mother and how the eye contact and how what is received as they look into the mother's eyes goes so much deeper than just looking at their iris and seeing a color. It is how things are imparted, you know, and there's a whole thing that a mother has a function in, that when they're that sort of drawing, there is things that's within the mother that's imparted to the child through their eyes as they're looking both ways, really. And so there is our natural eyes, which are things that we can see through, but also there are things that we receive through that. Then they have the eyes of the heart, which obviously is our imagination, and that's in the area of our soul, which is very much opening the eyes of our heart so that we can engage the screen of vision, dreams, things that God gives us and we can use to activate stepping in. And then it's the eyes of our spirit. So where our spirit actually sees, you know, and how does our spirit see? Well, it sees spiritually. So, you know, that's not something that, in a sense, that I could do until I learned how to engage it and practice it. And then, you know, for me, it worked. I don't know whether it works differently for other people, but it was very much picking up frequency. You know, it was picking up the vibrational frequency in the realms around me and interpreting what I was picking up to understand it in an instant. It wasn't like I was trying to mentally figure it out. My spirit just received and communicated to me everything I need to know. So I learned to do that in activating it, in looking to engage my spirit with what's around and then receive information back that I can interpret, and I see as a, not as a picture per se in my mind, but as a knowing description of where I am. And that's a lot of what I do is that way. You know, I engage my spirit in something and my spirit, I know where I am, and I can communicate that cognitively to my soul. So that could be on the screen of my imagination if I chose to. It could be in my reason center as thoughts, of descriptive thoughts. Sometimes it's even feelings. I mean, but generally for me, it's I'm looking into the realm of the spirit with my eyes open rather than my eyes closed. I mean, but the eyes of my heart, I close my eyes to shut out every distraction and then focus on the screen of my imagination. But the eyes of my spirit, I engage while I've got my eyes open, and it's not like it's superimposed over the natural realm. It's just looking into that higher frequency, whether it's a higher wavelength or band of wavelength, that my spirit can tune into that my soul can't. But my soul is then informed, if you like, as my spirit releases the revelation. So hence I can see the angelic and can see that in those things, the colors and the different things around people. And simply as I perceive it through spiritual eyes rather than natural or even the eyes of my heart. So there's a lot when it comes to eyes. I don't know what that's got to do with peacocks, but other than peacocks being, you know, their wings have eyes, you know, and there's an appearance. And I think it's just often a symbol of something that God is wanting us to understand and look into. So it's like, okay, if I see eyes or I'm drawn to eyes, and I am personally, I mean, so I look at people and I look at their eyes first before I look at anything else, you know, and I, because it's like they are windows. You can see things in people's eyes. So that for me just draws me. I get drawn to people's eyes. But you know, I would say, you know, if you are, then it may be that God is wanting you to look into something, possibly.
I think the receiving was key. I think that's what I needed to hear, because I was trying to, you know, you don't try to figure it all out. You go on the journey and you let, you know, the Spirit teach you. But yeah. Some things are like, I mean, you know, that was kind of crazy. It was on all these walls and it was a pretty intense encounter. There's not really time to share it, but, you know, it just things that I was experiencing is just this expansion. You know, it was just like breaking the walls down and just expanding things. And I was discerning what I was doing in the spirit for the river to flow through. Yeah. But it was interesting seeing all these peacock eyes all over.
Yeah.
And I never thought of that, Mike. Thank you. The whole receiving, because you do receive. I mean, when you're in the engagement, you are receiving, but I never thought of my eyes receiving. But that's so true, even as you talk as a child, you know. They receive a lot, right? Oh, touch, yeah. Feeling, everything.
A whole load, yeah. And yeah. I mean, some of my most intense things of when I've looked into God's eyes, you know. Yeah. You know, the only place I didn't look into his eyes was in the dark cloud. And because I remember Ian Clayton saying, don't look into his eyes because you may never come back. And I was like, okay, I'm not looking into his eyes. But I looked into Jesus' eyes. You know, when I've encountered him when he was on the cross. And, you know, I've looked into his eyes and the depth of impartation of love and emotional connection by looking into his eyes was amazing. You know, I mean, and I look into wisdom's eyes. When I go and meet wisdom, you know, I look into her eyes. You know, I look to engage. And they're like pools of, I go places when I look into her. It's almost like it takes me into a depth of something which is just beyond anything I can explain. It's like by looking into her eyes, it's like takes me into another realm almost. So, you know, when I do look to engage God, in particular ways, I want to look into his eyes. If it's Jesus, if it's the Holy Spirit, you know, the Father, you know, I want eye contact. You know, and as I said, you know, when I looked into the pillar of fire within the judgment seat, it was like I was looking into the eyes of fire. You know, I mean, it's like it describes this, there's fire in his eyes. You know, I mean, there's a song we sing, Martin Smith song, I think, it'll call, you know, Fire Never Sleeps. You know, his fire never sleeps. Whenever I sing that, I end up like, oh man, I'm standing in front of the fire of God. I mean, it's just like, I can't sing it without actually engaging in it. And I get hot. You know, I'm like standing there thinking, I'm feeling hot. You know, just because it's like, it's a real thing for me. It's not like, because I've been there, I've seen it. It's not like I'm just singing a song about it. I engage it, you know, when I sing something like that, you know, it's an engagement for me, because actually his fire does never sleep. It's always there to accomplish that in different things for us, you know. So, yeah, good.
So I had something cool happen.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so a couple years ago, two years ago, I had a dream, encounter type dream, and a Russian pastor was in a boat, like a motorboat, mm-hmm. and I was going up in a whirlwind, he was pulling me up, and I was up higher, I don't know. And I was getting caught up, and it was like signs and wonders and fire and the number 60. And I saw his face very vividly, and I knew he was a pastor from Portland. So in the morning, I went, okay, who's the Russian pastor from Portland? And I went searching. It took about a week. I didn't find anybody in Portland. I found somebody in Seattle that Bobby Connor went to. So I said, that could be something. And then I found out he comes to Portland every week. And so he has services in Seattle and Portland. So then I knew. And then I went and looked at his face, and it was the same man. It was the same guy. I went, oh, my gosh, I'm onto something. Yeah. So then I was like stalking that church for a while. You know, I would go on, and I would translate their messages, and I would say, They got something that I need to get me up, to go up, to rise. Well, then I found out that 2 months before, Jeff Jansen had come to Portland and gone to, and spoken at their church, and that they had the YouTube videos. So now I was really excited, and for about three different days, I listened to these YouTube videos. I got caught up in their worship. They're Russians, and they just worship fervently. And I just felt like I was just holding on for dear life onto what they had birthed in the city or whatever. My family just thought I was so weird. And I went to their church, and they would put earphones, and they would interpret for me, you know. And I'd sit in the back. anyway. It was my little journey. It was exciting. Well, about a month ago, some of us were praying, and we were doing a lot of language like Daniel and the signet ring and the blood over Portland, a lot of stuff that Jeff was saying 2 years ago about the lamb is over Portland, the blood of the lamb is over Portland, and just really powerful stuff. And it reminded me, oh, this is like Jeff Jansen, what he was speaking over Portland. So I went to find Jeff Jansen, and I found out he was coming to Portland in a month, which was this last weekend. And I would have missed it, because these Russians don't broadcast anything, you know. They're just in their own little Russian world, you know, over there. I mean, they're awesome, and they're very open to whoever, but, you know, it's the language barrier. And so I said, okay, and we put it on the Vancouver Portland site, and we said, Jeff is coming, he's got a word for Portland. See, all the other big pastors that go to that church, like Paul Keith Davis and Jeff Wallen, and we went to Jeff Wallen at their church in Kent, my husband and I, and it was awesome. But all these ones, they always go to the Kent church, the Seattle church, because that's a big church. Nobody comes to Portland but Jeff Jansen, because he says something's happening in Portland. And are you frozen? Okay, well, I'll keep talking. Hopefully I didn't get kicked off.
No, you're still going.
Oh, no. So anyway, so what he's saying now is that Portland is, he's always said Portland's like a portal, but that there's a door, and he saw the door, and that 2015 is going to be huge for Portland. Things are just going to open up, and of course, it's going to, and anyway, there's more to that, but I'm just excited because I feel like our finger is on the pulse of something really on the edge that's happening. So since I've frozen, I can't see you guys. I don't know if you hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mentioned something too, but
you're back. Okay. Well, I think a lot of these things is about the shift in government that's taking place. And God is beginning to align things and shift things and bring the word into people to connect them into, okay, yeah, next year I do believe is going to be a significant year in many different ways. And it's making sure that we begin to administrate that which we know we're mandated to do. So, you know, in terms of your mandate in terms of Portland, it's like the mandate which goes across this 49th parallel, the mandate that you have together over this area and region that you're looking to engage with, You know, it's like, okay, what does that look like administratively? Because I think, yeah. Bracey, you're in, what, Vancouver? Yeah. And Cindy, you're, yeah.
Vancouver.
Yeah, you're in Vancouver. So you've got Portland. I know that there are some people in Seattle that are beginning to really, again, connect and start to do stuff. So I know things are going, and that this whole area is really significant, you know, and there will be particular places that will become these cities of refuge that are going to be the places where, you know, the kingdom is on earth as it is in heaven, you know. So, you know, I think let's make sure that we're clear on what we're being called to do and how we're being called to join together and what we're being called to do in unity in these things to ensure that there's enough people doing stuff in the realms of heaven to enable what's going on the earth to be fully outworked. Because, and I think that's why you guys and others are catching some of this to then begin to administrate it, you know, and because it, God needs people who can do stuff in the realms of heaven, not just do stuff in the realms of earth. Because when a word is released, it has to be administrated from heaven. You know, and I think so many people get disappointed. It's like, oh, this word was brought. Okay, well, what's anyone done with it? Well, we've just been waiting for it to come apart, come, you know, to come about. Well, Have you warred on it? Have you begun to administrate it? Have you assigned the angels to it? Have you got mandates and strategies for it? Well, no, didn't know any of that. And that's why it's really important that those who have caught hold of this dimension really take those things and are aware. What is it that God is wanting to release? Because he will still release it through prophets, because he said he doesn't do anything without releasing it through prophets. So there will be people who come and bring a word, and they're bringing God's word, but it's the administration of that word apostolically which is the key. Because if it's not governed, it's just a word. It may be even God's word, but it needs to be governed and administrated to bring it about, you know. And that's really what I feel what God is doing, you know, aligning people and bringing people together to, so that, you know, these things begin to be ruled and governed correctly, and then we'll see a multiplication of what God's purposes are in it. And some of those people who will benefit from that will have no idea what's going on in the realms of the kingdom in that, but it doesn't matter, because, you know, it's for blessing that we want to be blessed so that we can bless others. So, yeah, that's good. Very good.
I had a... can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I had a couple of things happen that were really amazing. The last time we had our session and we stepped in and everything, I had at towards the end, and I was a little bit rushed for time because I couldn't really, you kind of left us and I couldn't really stay there because I had a busy day. But I had this, right at the end, I had this huge angel, and I don't know if it was mine or not. I mean, I was very friendly. We knew each other, and he goes, come quickly, come quickly. So I'm rushing down the hallway, and we go in this back door, and I open, and I'm like in a balcony, and it looks like a theater kind of thing, but it feels really heavy, and there's lots of people, and they're all like brightly lit up, each like head, and there's a lot of them, you know, and they're all faced forward, and I felt like, wow, this is where it's at, man. This is the center of the universe where, you know, they're making laws for us. And so I'm sitting in the back, and he's like, you know, like looking at me like stern, like you need to be quiet, you know, like don't say anything. And so I'm sitting in the back. I mean, he was nice, but, you know, he knows me, so don't say anything, you know, and so I'm just sitting there, and I'm watching it, and I'm feeling this weight, and so I go about my day, and it was a couple of days later, and I think a friend, somebody posted on the mystic page, and it was the diagram of the Galactic Council. And I went, oh my gosh, that's where that was. And so, and I saw the upper balcony, and I'm like, oh, that's where I came in. Is that? And so, I don't even know what that is, and I don't even know if that's what it was. But it, when I saw the diagram, I went, oh, that was it. Mm. And so that was the first thing. So, and then I don't even know what to do with that.
Well,
okay.
Well, in a sense, like sometimes there's nothing you do with it, because it's an encounter that's opened up to show you that there are things being legislated that we will be affected by, and ultimately you may well be able then to go and present a case there, because when you go before the Galactic Council, you have to have a really good case, because they are going to administrate things, so you need a wealth of prophetic background. It's like you need insight into the things that you're presenting in a case, because it could be, okay, I want you to, the Galactic Council are going to be legislating, and they're going to be, you know, they legislate in periods of time. I think, is it 85 days or something from February, and then there's another 85 days and another, and then I think in the end there's a rest period. But they administrate things. They put boundaries on things. They release legislation for things. So you may be being shown what was going on there, because there may be a case that you need to present. And you may need to present that in unison together. Maybe that you have something we're called to something here, and we need a real shift to take place, or we need it to a limitation taking place, you know, depending on what it is. You know, so that could be some of the reason. Sometimes it's like you see things because God just wants to show you, hey, there's a whole load more here, and you are governmental. You know, you wouldn't get taken to a place like that to observe, to see, if it wasn't for a reason, to encourage you to continue to outwork government.
Okay.
You know, and again, it's like going back to God and say, okay, God, is there something specific? Is this something for the future? You know, where does this sit with me right now? But it's good, isn't it? I mean, you know, I mean, last time I was aware that I had to go, and I was aware that we were sort of in the middle of something. So I thought, well, okay, just leave it go. But it's good to hear testimonies. Because sometimes I don't get to hear testimonies of what happened or where people go. You know,
right.
I hear where I went, and I know where I went on it. But sometimes I can't go into the depth of some of those experiences because I would get lost. Yeah, then it would be like, okay, well, where am I? You know. So I tend to sort of observe, or, you know, sometimes I get drawn in. You know, I got drawn into the Firestones thing yesterday, but it was like that went on and on and on. So.
Well, it's funny you say that, because when you were talking like that, I immediately knew what my case was.
Yeah, right.
And so the second thing I wanted to say was that it feels like everything is like ramping up, and I've heard from people in California and other places that it's like, whoa, worship has just been unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Lord has been teaching me in the last 15 years, you know, like, when I do worship, like we're living in England, and this church, this Anglican church, gave us the keys, and we could do anything we wanted in there, right? So we would have worship nights for 4 and 5 hours. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just like getting drunk before people knew what getting drunk was, right? Yeah. And having manifestations and stuff, and then they would say, people would say the next Sunday after we'd do our Friday or Saturday or worship night, they'd go, church was wild. So I kind of knew that we all affect each other. So we had a worship night on Friday night, and trying to legislate government through worship, and it's interesting learning process. Having everybody step in and engage and stir themselves up before I even start. So I just wait. I'm like, if you're not going to do it, we're going to go home, you know, kind of thing. So, because it's not worth it.
Yeah.
And so, just feeling like everything we did that night, and it was really interesting because we had a lot of waiting period, and I, before we were in a very intimate room, and now our bedroom worship has been taken into the living room, and it's a little vulnerable. So all the waiting and all that stuff is a little uncomfortable when you have people going, "What are you doing?" kind of thing. So we just had this night, and it was beautiful, and it was about the Father's love being, you know, we're right in the middle of the unemployment office and child protective services and all that stuff. And so we're releasing this love of the Father, and I'm so aware that there's no songs about Daddy. I mean, there just isn't. We're just going to have to write them. So so our night kind of had this progression, and it ended up with the keyboard player going, "I need to pray for people because I'm on fire and releasing fire and all that stuff." And so then Sunday comes along, and, you know, everyone's, "Oh, Sunday's going to be great." Well, Sunday was great, but Sunday was exactly what we did.
Right.
It was like a mirror of what we did. Mm. And I was just realizing that, well, if we really understood how we connect, that we would be praying for my Friday night to be unbelievable, so Sunday could be, you know what I mean? It would be this whole love triangle of that. And so the case that I was, when you were talking, is so we're releasing these governmental things and starting to talk a little bit more about the things that we're learning, and, you know, my group's getting a little bit bigger. And but there's this opposition that's coming against different people and speaking loudly from the pulpit of you know, coming against all this stuff. And so can we, because I have a bench, so can we take that? And I mean, how do you even prepare your case? Because it's not just one person, it's like the area. It's like in this city, and I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
So I would, and we've gone on top of the mountain, you know, all that stuff.
Okay.
How do you even? I don't know.
I don't know. The short answer is I have no idea. But I think, in a sense, it's like if the case is for the removing of the stumbling blocks or the hindrances that are seeking to block what God's purposes are in an area, then whatever we do, we must do it in love. We mustn't do it out of any sense of vengeance or retribution or the wrong heart. And we must do it from a perspective of honor and honoring those even when they are speaking against us. And if we're going to deal with it first in our court, then we need to deal with it by releasing forgiveness. You know, and releasing forgiveness to them and releasing them from the things that they are having a negative effect on. So it's like, you know, a lot of people just forgive people. So, well, I just forgive you. Well, okay, you can forgive someone for what they did, but what about releasing them from the effects that it had in you? And those effects can go on for years if they're not released. And if we don't release people, then we're tied to them. So it may be that the area is tied to what some of these people have done. And by forgiving them for what they're saying and for what they may have been modeling or demonstrating, we release them and we release the land from their connection and tie to it. So that then what God can do then, he can come in and do his stuff. Because when we release people for God to obtain, and we're releasing them into his blessing, and we want him to bless them, and we do, but we also need to recognize that the enemy will use their authority, because if they are leaders in your area, they have authority that the enemy will latch onto and will use their authority to use the things they're saying to seek to hinder and block God's purposes and plans. So it is a difficult one, and we're going to have to all face it, because next year there's a line coming, there's a judgment coming. God is going to start to clearly challenge people to cross over the line and engage in a new dimension, and there will be a whole load of people, like there were when they were going to come and cross into the promised land, saying, no, there's giants, this is new age, this is wrong, this is visualization, this is that, this is the other, and they will be potentially being used by the enemy, and they will be saying, don't cross the line, it's dangerous, don't go in there, you know. And that's exactly what the children of Israel did, and they were all leaders, you know, the 10 tribe leaders, as opposed to, you know, Caleb and Joshua, the rest of them, they were all leaders of the tribes, and they said, don't go in there, you know, don't cross, it didn't belong to us, there's giants in there, we're grasshoppers. And so it's really recognizing that that is coming, but what we do, we must deal with it from a perspective of honor, and we must not get into arguments, right and wrongs, trying to prove our point, trying to put down their point. All we do is we're obedient to do what God's called us to do, and we keep doing it. We don't let them, anybody's negative thing, stop us. We don't let that affect us. We don't let it hinder us. We make sure that we're from the right heart. We just continue doing what God's called us to do, and we continually release blessing and forgiveness on those. Because we can take the enemy into the court who is making accusation against us, and that accusation will be true. You know, when we take our others into the court, their accusations may be false, but we forgive them and we release them from their false accusations, and we bless them and we hand them over to God for God to do whatever he needs to do, you know. Now, they are under their own consequences if they are using curses or they're doing things, because a curse without a cause will not alight. So there's a danger when people start negatively coming against what God's order is, because they are subject to the judgment that will come on them. Because they're not making a judgment to life, they're making a judgment to death. And that is a very dangerous thing to do. But that wouldn't, you know, I would want mercy for them. You know, I honor and respect people who've gone before and who are stuck. You know, they've many of those people have helped me get where I am. And I honor that, and I bless it, and I want to bless them. And I long to, I mean, I wonder how, you know, Joshua and Caleb's response to what went on wasn't like, okay, right, let's get a sword out, let's just kill these guys. It was, they rent their clothes. And it's like, oh, whoa, is this sackcloth and ashes? It's like, oh, how sad. And they were so sad that then the whole generation of them, I don't know how many were in the army, all those from 20, you know, 20 years up, well, there could have been 500,000 people. You know, there was 2 million people, there were probably 1 million ladies, you know, there was a whole load of people who weren't too old, there was a whole load of people who were too young. So it could have been 25% of the people, and they all died, you know, because they just refused to embrace their destiny and what God had said, and they listened to the fear that the enemy had brought by projecting giants, you know. And it was sad, you know. And you know, sometimes I have occasionally, God has allowed me to emotionally feel what he feels about those who are refusing to cross over into their inheritance. And it is sad. It's a deep, deep sadness. And so I'm not angry. You know, it's more of a sadness and for the loss that people are going to face. You know, and I desperately want people to say, hey, God is drawing this line, cross over, come over here. You know, but what we must do is be models of what it is, without trying to argue or fight our case or cause. We just need to keep doing what God has called us to do in obedience, and that will provoke some people to, hey, wow, look at that. And it will provoke others to judgment. But that's not our responsibility. But when they do judge, we must forgive and release this. It's absolutely vital to it. And if there is a case where there is unforgiveness, then the enemy will have access to block. Because, you know, Matthew 18, if we do not forgive from the heart, then we end up in a torture chamber. You know, that's what it says. You know, and that is where the enemy is not God who's torturing, it's the enemy who has access to torture us. You know, it's like the whole thing, you know, taking poison and wanting someone else to die. You know, it doesn't work. You know, we're the ones who are affected by unforgiveness, not the people that we're unforgiven to. You know, all we do is hold them so God can't do anything in their lives because we have not released them into God's hands. You know, so it's a big one. And I know it's a major issue that's coming. And I think next year is going to see a real increase in it. So we really need to learn how to deal with it, you know.
Oh, it's here.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing it on not just for me, but even the people that are around me, and it's coming hard. Mm. But it is making people shift and transition and network with the ones that are, you know, swimming in the same river in the same direction.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And that's what it is, you know, because essentially, when God draws the line of judgment, he's saying, I'm here, I'm no longer here, you choose. He didn't force them to go into the promised land, it was a choice. And he was give them every opportunity, but it's a choice, and every one of those people has a choice. You know, and every move of God, there have been people who, however strong they've been in what has been, it becomes a threat to move, you know. And actually we have to keep following where God goes, so we keep swimming in that direction, following the river of life, and encouraging by what we're doing others to want the same. You know, it's like the same thing. It's like when the mountain of the house of the Lord gets raised up, all the other, they're described as hills, then will stream to it. Because, hey, here is the truth. Here's the city on the hill. Here's the light. And those that are looking for light will be drawn to it. Those that are in darkness won't be. Because what does light do? Expose darkness. You know, it doesn't have to do anything. It just exposes darkness. And so some people do not want to come into the light because of the darkness that they carry. You know, and there, well, you only have to look at the testimonies of those people who have fallen and have had high profile situations, and, you know, they've ended up in sin or whatever else. They didn't intend to do what they did. But it ended up there, and then the light exposes it, and then it's like, oh, woe is me. It's like, and for those who do not repent, then they stay in darkness until they do, and it's sad. You know, and I hate, in Satan's trophy room, the mantles of those who have not repented. You know, and it's a sad thing that the enemy is laughing over those who have fallen and been unrepentant. I mean, it's like we couldn't have done it. No one can do any worse than David did. You know, man, it's like, yeah, he committed adultery. He coveted someone else's wife. He killed the guy so he could get her. You know, it's like, it's pretty heavy duty stuff. And yet, because his heart was contrite and he was repentant, when it was pointed out to him prophetically by the prophet, his response was one of humility. And then what is God's response in that is, hey, here is someone who is a man after my own heart. Here is someone who has fulfilled the purpose of God in their generation. And I think that's just an amazing testimony to God's grace. And so those people who have fallen, I would never, you know, hinder them in being restored. You know, and true repentance obviously is a change of behavior, but it's done in relationship out of love, not out of judgment and criticism and heavy stuff. Because let's face it, every one of us are capable of the same. If we're not walking after God and we're walking after the flesh, the sad thing is there must have been a real lack of relationship and accountability for those people who may have felt isolated and alone in their high-profile roles, which did not protect them. And I think that is why it's so important that we are in relationship, in benches of three, where we're open, honest, transparent, where we're open with where we're going through, where we're protecting and covering each other in that, because we have to be real. And, you know, it's the light is coming, you know. And I think, you know, those of us who are forerunners are getting it first, because we have to learn how to do it, and then we have to learn how to teach other people to do it. You know, and I've had this for the last few years, not in a sort of outward sense, but actually the enemy has sought to infiltrate, and through political spirit, Jezebel spirit, all that stuff that tries to operate from within to get you to fight in the same spirit. And we blessing, you know, we had a blessing here in a sense, because, you know, I would have not necessarily handled it the way it was handled if it was down to me, and I'm really pleased that there was two others who had wisdom to say, actually, we're not going to fight. We're not going to fight with this. We are going to continue to maintain this is our position. We're not going to fight. And God just removed the person. And then he removed two other people who wanted to control things. And it was just like, okay, we're not going to fight. We're going to love them, you know, and we're going to bless them, but we're not going to fight with them. You know, and you come in the opposite spirit to deal with these things. It's so hard to do that sometimes when it becomes personal and directed, but that's the only way, and you only can do that out of forgiveness. You know, if we come out of bitterness, resentment, and any of those things, then we are going to be open season for the enemy to do whatever he wants to do. So, you know, when even there are enemies, we have to bless them. You know, doesn't matter whether they deserve it or not. Obviously they don't deserve it if they're giving us a hard time, but actually Jesus already died for them. It's like their sin has already been paid for. What right have I got to hold it against them? None. So, you know, I have to choose to forgive and release. Doesn't mean I agree or have to condone what people do, but actually I still have to choose to forgive them and genuinely want them blessed. And if I can't genuinely want them blessed, then I'm not actually forgiving them.
I was just having a picture when you were talking.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I feel like I'm in, you know, confrontation 101 class, right? I'm getting pretty good at it. Yeah, you know, as they keep coming. The first time I wasn't very good, but now I'm starting to, you know.
Yeah, well, we get to practice, don't we? You know?
And now we've gone to, you know, another level. I'm not quite sure what this class is, but it was very interesting. But you're right about the mercy part. It's like, you know, in God's mercy, we say things so that, you know, people will turn and see, you know, because deception, you're deceived. So you can't actually see what's going on. And I find it really interesting because when you were talking, I was seeing how, you know, you were saying, okay, well, we're just going to keep doing what God has told us to do. And someone comes at you with something or whatever, and you just look at them in love and go, you know, the whole love and logic thing, thanks for sharing. Mm. Yeah. And you just keep going doing what you're doing. And yeah. Almost like understanding our place and where we're seated, because the enemy's under us. So,
yeah.
And just loving and going, thanks. Yeah. You know, I do that with my kids. You know, they go, I want to go and dye my hair and tattoo my face. I'm like, wow, thanks for sharing. You know, so. And I was just seeing how that's a loving way of being firmly rooted and grounded in what God is telling you to do, and then also dealing with all the, you know, all the stuff around us that's, you know, happening. So that was interesting. So
yeah, and you know, there are heavenly strategies that God can give us with insight and revelation to be able to do something in a situation, but the reason anything we do, we must be mandated to do, not out of reaction or out of hurt or out of any of those things or fear or any of those things. It must be because we're mandated to do something, you know. And most of what God wants is for us to continue to be obedient with what he's doing, because in a sense he will leave the old system. We don't it's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to embrace the new. It's his responsibility to deal with whatever is in the old. You know, and his desire in that is always to get people to embrace the new. You know, but ultimately, you leave that to him. And, you know, if he's coming with judgment, judgment is not punishment. So many people think, well, God is going to judge the household of God, and we're all going to be in trouble. And actually, that's not what judgment means. It's not punishment. You know, that punishment thing is a religious spirit. Because how can God punish anybody that has already been punished in Jesus? There may be consequences people have for their own actions, but in reality, God does not punish people. He does not bring judgment on a city because of their sin. Their sin has already been forgiven. What he wants is to bring judgment and actually bring life, to say, hey, this is me. Come and follow me. You know, Jesus didn't go around judging people. He had a bit of an issue with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and those who were leading people astray, and he was very straight with them. But a load of them still followed him. You know, and we've got to be those that are careful to continue to do what God's saying and allow him to do what he's doing. You know, and some of us will be a provocation for it. I mean, we can't help it, because we are a sword. But it's not because we desire to cause offense, but what we do causes offense. I mean, I think John Wimber used to say years ago, God offends the mind to reveal the heart, you know. And my mind has been offended plenty of times. And it's definitely revealed my heart, which wasn't in a good place, you know. So actually, now if I find my mind focusing on something and going over something and playing it back and trying to figure out what I should have said and what I know very well, I need to forgive the situation immediately, and then I need to seek, why is my heart responding this way? You know, because I use that reaction as a stepping stone to change. To see, yeah, why am I thinking that? Because there must be something in my heart which is causing me to react that way. And you'll find every familiar spirit will just jump on it. They'll love to turbocharge it, you know. And so if ever you find yourself playing something, and I God showed me this really clearly, and I was doing it in this incident where I was, in a sense, it was like I was being unfairly treated in this instance, but actually, when it came to it, it was like, well, why am I reacting to that injustice? You know, what has caused me to react to that injustice? And I was replaying it, and I was thinking, well, I wish I'd said this. And I think, well, that would have been a good thing to say, you know, as if I was going to win the argument or get over a point. And in the end, I took it to God, and I forgave the person, and I said to God, okay, show me what this person said, and actually, was it the truth? And he said, yes. And I'm like, that's really unfair. And it was like, so I said, okay, well, show me why it's the truth. Because they were accusing me of not doing something very well. You know, and it was like, okay, it's the truth. So I asked him, should I be doing this? And he said no. So he gave me the wisdom to go back to the person and say, you're absolutely right. I'm really not very good at this, and I really want to give you the job. So will you take on this role, and will you do this job? And they were like, yeah, okay. So I'm like, fantastic. So I don't need to be good at that, because me being bad at it is just now will allow someone else to be good at it now when I give up the job. Now, if it was something I should have been better at, God said, well, how are you going to get better at anything? He said, well, go and find someone who's good at it and ask them to teach you. It's like, ooh, that's a bit of a humble pie. And it's like, you know. So in this instance, I was able to bless somebody else with this job who was able to do it, and they're still doing it. In another instance, I have to go and say, can you teach me to do this better? Because I'm rubbish at it. You know, but I need to know, am I supposed to be good at it or am I not? Because I don't want to be focusing on something I'm not supposed to be doing. This one totally freed me up. So now every time I get to these sort of situations, I go through this process, you know, and I ask God to show me. And so if it's rooted in something in my life, then, okay, expose where the roots are so that I can be free from the reaction. I won't need to react that way, you know, because actually it's rooted in this memory or this situation or that. Therefore, okay, I'm going to deal with that, whether it's lie busting or generationally, I'll deal with it, get rid of it. Now I don't need to behave that way or think that way or act that way. But you'll find every familiar spirit will just line up waiting for you to go down the route, and they'll just be like, whoa, we go down there, you know, this is what it will be, you know. So I've learned to recognize that much easier, you know, and now they know that they go into the courtroom and they get judged by God, and if they reoffend, they get severely judged by God, so they leave me alone. You know, they just leave me alone now. You know, well, it took a bit of a time to get them to the fact that they were going to leave me alone, but now they do, because they know I'm smart over it. I understand how they function, and they're not going to have any go, you know. But it is a journey that we learn, and it's through the trials that we learn how to do it better next time, you know. And ultimately, you know, we need to get over ourselves quite a lot, really. You know, it's like, it's not about me. And if I'm offended, it's like, it's not about me, you know. And it just means I'm not dead in that area if I'm offended. So I might as well die and present myself as a living sacrifice and get that dealt with, so I won't be offended. Then I can genuinely smile, as you say. Thank you very much for sharing that pearl of wisdom with me. You know, and genuinely smile, and that's okay. It's not going to affect me in that way. Bless you. But you know, it's sometimes a quite a long journey, and there's quite a few stops on it that we get to stop at. You know, certainly for me, you know, it took me a while to learn. And even sometimes it's like, I still want to bring down fire from heaven on somebody. It's like, you know, it's like, no, I don't think you quite got the picture. You know, go and stand in the fire yourself, you know. And it's whenever we want to bring down fire anyone, it's a really good indication we need to go and stand in the fire, which gets us back where we first started with the river of fire flowing out of the throne of God. Because, you know, that's the place where some of this stuff gets dealt with and everything else. So that's good. Anyway. Okay. Right. Well, I better leave it there.